Dear students, throughout the semester, we've been discussing accumulating investments, identifying, purchasing, monitoring, and building our nest egg. We haven't discussed how to spend it. Obviously, everyone's different, but let's assume that we have been accumulating this nest egg for retirement. And so in chapter 11, we discussed the idea of diversification. And by now, hopefully you understand that the younger you are, the more you're able to take advantage of the growth in stocks. But as you get older, then we like the stability that bonds offer us. Do we not? Yes, we do. So what we're going to do is take a look at a few different scenarios in retirement, because the conventional wisdom 50 years ago, 100 years ago, was that if you were in retirement, you really shouldn't own any stocks. And then there was the old rule of thumb that you should have your age in bonds and the rest in stocks, or subtract 100 from your age to get the number of stocks. So let's say you were 60, you'd have 60% in bonds, 100 minus 60 is 40, 40% in stocks. Well, that was when people were living far less, many years, far fewer years than they are now. Well, COVID virus notwithstanding, people are living into their 80s and 90s, and you younger folks, 100 should be, de rigueur. It should be very, very attainable for many people. We'll see what happens. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at four different scenarios. One where we simply invested in bonds in our retirement. One where we simply invested in stocks in our retirement. Not the most, prudent thing to do, but hey, it's an option. And then what we're going to do is we're going to use those same two stock and same two funds, the one stock fund and the one bond fund, and use them in retirement. And then take a look at a well-run balance fund, because I'm a big fan of balance funds, especially in retirement, especially if it's a well-run balance fund. Be careful of those asset allocation funds that tell you they're going to time the market just fine, and you don't believe it. Right, exactly. Now, we have these all on the hard drive, so it's a lot nicer to look at. So I'm going to minimize the browser. And I think this should look familiar to you. Remember the hypothetical illustrations: be afraid, be very afraid. This report is not complete unless all pages are noted. Our investments are not FDIC insured, nor are they deposits of or guaranteed by a bank or any other entity, so they may lose value. Figures shown are past results and not predictive of future periods. Does anybody actually read all this? No, but the lawyers put it there so you don't get sued. So what we're going to do is we're going to use a bond fund. And we're going to have, let's say we have a nest egg of 500,000. Now that sounds like, oh my Lord, how will I ever accumulate 500,000? But folks, there are many people who have done it by starting early in their 401ks or their Roth IRAs and investing, a goodly amount, more as they can afford it, not get greedy during the market push, market manic manias, the bubbles, and don't panic when the market falls. And so this is the conventional wisdom. We're going to start with $500,000 and put it all into a bond fund. Now here's just one. There are dozens and dozens, hundreds of bond funds, but here's one that's been around for many years, the Bond Fund of America. Very generic fund, right? And we're going to start with an investment of $500,000. Let's assume that's what our nest egg had grown to. And we're going to start by taking 5% out annually. 5%. And that, in the 500,000, that's about, $25,000, right? 10% would be 50,000. But what we're going to do is we're going to increase it every year by 3%. Not 5, 8, 11. No. We're going to, the initial amount we started with, 25,000, will increase by 3% every year to keep pace with inflation. And so the hypothetical illustration is showing us our withdrawals. We started at April of 1995. We're going back 25 years, by the way. So we go back 25 years, started April of 1995, and we started with 16,000 for the first 8 months, right? 9 months. And now the next year is 25,000, 26,000, 27,000. You see, our withdrawals are going up. And then it's keeping track of the dividend income and the total dividend income, the total amount, any capital gains, if our bonds are sold at a capital gain, which is not too typical. And we see that our total value is actually going up because bonds actually did pretty well the last 25 years. So we're taking out less than our bond fund is giving to us until we hit, what was it, 1994, before 2008, was the last year that bonds went down. They continued to go up and up until 2008. And what happened? Bingo, right, everybody fell down. But bond, what, as you'd expect, the bond fund had hit a peak of about 600,000 here, it was 632, and now we're eating into the principal. And then we had 2008 where bonds got hammered. And they came back somewhat. Lots of things came back. But now by 2014 or so, our income has risen to the point where we're eating into the principal. And now we see our principal going down. And this is just what was expected. You know, I'm getting old. I'm maybe in my 80s, or if I started at 65, 25 years, that's, you know, 90 by the time this is over. So I've started with a nest egg of $500,000. I've taken out a total of $900,000 out of my $500,000, and my nest egg is down to $229,000. Well, but you know, I'm pretty old. That's typical. 5.85%, what you'd expect over the long term from a bond fund. Now you're not going to get that much going forward because bonds are paying far less than 6%. And so let's take a look at the graph. And it's exactly what we'd expect to see. We start with our nest egg of 500,000. It actually goes up because bonds did pretty well over the last 25 years as interest rates continue to fall until 2008, when everybody fell down. Now, treasury bonds actually went up, but munis and corporate bonds, and some corporate bonds, we saw the Ford bonds went down really far. And now we start eating into our principal, and we're down to 229, but we still have a few more years of life, hopefully, right? Well, what's the problem? The problem, in my humble opinion, is that we should not rely on just on bonds in our retirement. It used to be that people retired at 62 and died at 64, or retired at 65 and died at 69. They just didn't have that many years in your golden years. But that's not true anymore, coronavirus notwithstanding. People are living far longer. So we need to have some kind of a stock growth part of our portfolio. And we even, in Chapter 11, discussed the idea that if you add some stocks, you actually reduce the volatility. So let's take a look at a all-stock portfolio. It's the same situation. Be afraid, be very afraid. $500,000 nest egg, but instead we're going to put it into the mutual fund that we talked about in Chapter 4, that generic mutual fund, Investment Company of America, and we're going to do the exact same strategy. We're going to start taking out 5% annually and then increase that 5%, $25,000, by 3% every month and watch our withdrawals grow because inflation is going up and so our withdrawals are going up. And so we start with that $25,000 a year, and it's going up about $1,000 a year. And look at what happened in the late 1990s. Whoa, our nest egg doubled in value because the 1990s was the latest stock bubble, mania, internet, new blue skies, productivity gains, telecommunications, software. Yeah, well, this guy actually held up pretty well from a peak of 1168 down to 900. Some many other stock mutual funds did not hold up that well. And then bounced back in the mid-2000s only to be clobbered by 2008. For 1.4 million down to 900,000. But we didn't give up. We held on. And it came back by, took five or six years to 2013. So 5 years it took to come back to 1.6. 1.7 2 million as of the end of 2019. 2019 was a very good year. 2.4 million. And now what? Look, the first quarter, March, was brutal. Now it's come. We didn't show what happened in April, but you know, it's right now it's incredibly volatile. But look, look, folks, we get the same amount of income. We get that same 900,000, but because we have invested for growth, we're able to have a nest egg of 1.9 million. Now, that's a bit unrealistic, isn't it? You'd be in your 90s or late 80s, and you'd be saying, I'm not going to hang on to this. I'm going to start spending it. Maybe not. Depends. But are we willing to put up with that volatility? Because as it should look familiar, right? This is what stock investing is like. It's a roller coaster. There was the late 90s and then the early 2000 bear market. And then 2008, it gave us a heart attack in our 70s and our late 80s. And then we came back and there's 2000 and that was 2015. It was a little bit down in 2015, not much, like 3%. And then there's the end of 2018 when it fell almost 20%, basically fell 20%. Wasn't called an official bear market. And then it roared back in 2019, and then you can't really see it, but there is the first quarter of 2020. That's a drop of some $400,000, $500,000. So are we really willing to accept this kind of volatility from our retirement investments? The answer for the vast majority of us is no. Most people do not want to accept that volatility in their golden years. So let's take a look at what happens if we simply buy $250,000 in the bond fund and $250,000 in the stock fund. Now, we did not take advantage of what is called rebalancing. We discussed this in Chapter 11, and most all mutual fund companies now have an option. They will automatically rebalance it for you. You just click on a little box, say, I want you to rebalance my investments, and they will do it for you. I didn't take advantage of that because that, first of all, is relatively new. But also, I just said, let's just do the bond fund and let's do the stock fund. And so what we're going to see is that it's going to reduce the volatility, but also reduce our nest egg. We start again with the same strategy. Start with 500,000, taking out 25,000, 5%, and then increasing that. So we're going to get the same amount. We're going to get the same $900,000 from our withdrawals. But because we have a bond and a stock portfolio, we see that it does better than just the bond portfolio, but not as well as just the stock portfolio. There's 2007, went from 1 million down to 700,000, but we kept up going, we kept going, and we've come back to 1.1 million and got and received 8.28%. But what we should see is more volatility, right? And exactly, indeed we do. There's the early 2000s, right? There's the early 2000s, the internet bubble bursting. There's 2008. 2015, when we had the temper tantrum, when the bonds took a bit of a hit, and then there's 2018, and then there's 2020. So we have taken on more volatility. We have the same income always. We always get the same income, but our nest egg is considerably more than just the bond portfolio, which was what, down to 200 and some thousand, but considerably less than the all stock portfolio. Now, here's the best part. As I said, I'm a big fan of balance funds, well-run balance funds. And we talk about this balance fund. It's one of the nation's oldest. It's been around in one form or another since 1937. It's not the only one, folks. There are many good out there. There are many that are not so good. So do your homework, right? And so again, be afraid. Be very afraid before we show you the good news. But here it's called, of all things, the American Balance Fund. Can you get any more generic than that? And as we made mention of this back in Chapter 4, their goal is to be the complete investment program for the prudent United States investor. So it's a domestic balance fund and invests in domestic stocks and domestic bonds. And so we're going to start with that same strategy, $500,000 nest egg, 5% annually, increasing by 3%. And in the prospectus, it says that the American Balance Fund will never be more than 75% stocks, 25% bonds, and never be less than 50% stocks, 50% bonds. So they keep that balance, right? And because they do it, just because they're doing their job, they sometimes find the stocks are overpriced, so they're not going to sell all their stocks. They're not going to buy all bonds. They'll go down to 50-50. And then when they see the stocks are a screaming good deal, they'll go up to 75% stocks, down to 25% bonds. And so they will rebalance automatically part of their what they do. And so again, the end of the 1990s did very well, not quite doubled, but pretty darn close. Went down not anywhere near as much in the 2000 to 2002 because the bond part, right, the bond held us up. When stocks go down, often bonds go up. Then by 2007, we had 1.1 million and we lost about 200,000 in that 2008 debacle. Our income is growing as per before, but we're coming back. And by 2012, 2013, we're back to where we were in 2007. And then the last few years have been pretty darn good. And we went down, of course, in 2018. A lot of other people did too, but nowhere near as much. So we get the same amount, $907,000 in income. But our nest egg is considerably more than the bond separate and stock separate mutual funds where we add them together. It's less than the all stock fund, but as we're going to see, but look at that, 9%. You don't expect 9% over 25 years from your balance fund, folks. If you get 7, 8%, you should be very, very happy. But these guys, I don't expect them to do that in the next 25 years. I really don't. I'm not trying to badmouth them. Maybe they will make me look stupid. I hope that I'm around in 25 years to determine. But they have just been exemplary. They're not the only ones. So let's take a look at the volatility. It's smoother than the all stock fund, yes, but it still bounces quite a bit. It's nowhere near as smooth as the bond fund, but at the same time, look at that growth. That's an exponential. It's just starting to go crazy. But look, there's 2002, didn't drop anywhere near as much as the stock fund. 2007, it dropped pretty far, but not as much as the stock fund did. And then there's the 2008 and then 2018 and then the 2020 downturn right at the beginning of the year. So you see why I'm personally a big fan of balance funds, even in retirement, because the truth is, folks, over the long term, stocks must do better than bonds. Why is that? Well, because where do bonds get the money to pay the bonds, right? Corporations get the money from earnings. If they're not doing well, the stock is going to suffer, but then so is the bonds. Where do the municipalities get the bonds? Where does the treasury get the bonds, the money to pay for the bonds? From taxes. And if no one's earning any money and the stock market has fallen into the porcelain oasis, then eventually the bond market will follow. The bond market has to be supported by the stock market. I shouldn't say it that way, but what I'm trying to say is if the stock market craters and stays crater, if there's no food at the Vons and no gas at the Chevron station, no clothes at the Gap, the cell phones aren't working, SDG&E is not pumping out electricity, the schools, the hospitals, the banks, the fire departments, the police departments are all shuttered, the trash isn't being picked up, the sewer's backed up. It doesn't matter where your money is. The whole thing will have crashed and burned and will be digging for beetle grubs and boiling bark for dinner. But as I said, I'm really optimistic. Once we get through this pandemic, which might take a year or two, and hopefully I'm still alive on the other side, but I know personally that humans will survive and we will come back stronger and hopefully smarter. We've got a lot of people with very low IQs out there denying what the people who have spent 12 years and 20 years studying epidemiology. I can actually say that word, folks. The study of diseases like pandemics, and they're just in denial. They're just thinking, oh, no problem. I don't have to worry. I'm young. Yeah, what's killing young people, too? So figure that one out. It's killing most of us old folks, though. So how do you like this, folks? If you want to see any other illustrations, just ask me. As I said, I love to talk about investments. I can talk about these things a lot longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen. So it's time for me to show up. Shut up. So go back and take a look at these four situations. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? With a balanced fund, we can eat reasonably well and we can sleep reasonably well. See ya!